Okay, folks, we're going to begin the third and final hour of this forum. So help yourself to any food or drinks that you want at any time. We are on a pretty tight schedule. We have about 8 or 9 speakers for the final hour. I'm very pleased with the way things have gone so far. People have been very communicative, very eloquent about their views, and look forward to the final group of speakers. First person is Rosemary Milham, who's the director of the Master Teaching Program and teaches in the Department of Secondary Education. Rosemary, come forward. Remind everybody that this is being recorded, so don't say anything you don't want to be immortalized.
Do I need to tiptoe?
No, you don't need to do anything.
Challenged. Hi, I'm Dr. Rosemary Milham, the Secondary Ed Department. Yes, I am the director of the Master Teacher Program, but I was hired and in my tenure year for coordinator of the Secondary Education Science in 7 programs, 4 undergraduate and 3 grad. You know, because we're the secondary, I'm looking at this from a totally different perspective. We have adjuncts. I have an adjunct now teaching my grad level inquiry course because I'm overloaded with everything else and still have extra service in my department. But the adjuncts that I think that are sometimes missing in that whole framework are the adjuncts that we hire to actually supervise our student teachers. These people get around $640 per student and go and visit these students 6 times over the semester minimum, and they travel as far as 45 miles from here. It's 90 miles round trip for each visit. Now, they do get mileage, but they don't get paid for the time that they're traveling to and from these schools. And they're in the school sometimes anywhere from 2 to 3 or 4 hours observing students and talking to the cooperating teachers and talking to the student teachers. So in essence, if you take a look at even a minimum of 6 visits per semester, an adjunct being paid $643 per student is now, depending on how many hours it takes to go to and from these schools, is going to end up between $21 and $32 an hour for their actual work. That doesn't seem fair to me at all. Adjunct salaries, even if they took the $5,000 that was proposed in the resolution next to the last line that Peter sent out, is still only $40,000 a year in Ulster County, in New Paltz. I have a part-time job that I used to do full-time for a federal agency down in Washington, D.C., and I got COLA because I lived in the Washington, D.C. area. That's a cost of living allowance. So every paycheck, I got an X number of dollars to help pay for the taxes and whatever it costs to live in the high-cost area. So I'm saying, the least they could do is give a COLA for New Paltz if they can't at least get up to $5,000 per course. That's all I have to say. Any questions? Bye.
Thank you very much, Ro.
You're welcome.
Next speaker is Dennis Doherty. Dennis, are you here? Yep, there he is. Who's been in the English department for, I don't know, how many years? Come on forward, Dennis. I'm not going to give you a long introduction because, we had a really nice spotlight article in the Bullhorn that was written by Jamie Burns last year. So it's archived on our page here if you want to learn more about Dennis and his really interesting career. Dennis.
Thanks, Peter. I've been working in the English department for 26 years, starting as a graduate TA, then was an adjunct for 9 years, teaching 2 classes on top of a full-time job and sole support of a family of 5, and I've been a lecturer here for 14 years. I have a friend who just completed 20 years of service for a company, and they gave him a gold watch and a plaque. For my 21st year, I was running the creative writing program, teaching three courses and directing the poetry board, they gave me two more classes. Most of my classes are creative writing, which means portfolio upon portfolio, reading poem after poem after poem, and dealing with the personal travails and soulful struggles of all my students. Their gut-wrenching demons, their traumas, and so forth. This takes a lot of time. You don't buzz through a pile of 120 poems. That's how many I've critiqued so far this semester. You go one at a time, dealing with the personal problems that are being involved and dealing with the life struggles involved, and that's just the surface, because you're also trying to teach a highly complex art form and how to do it. If I were only teaching three creative writing courses, I'd be overloaded. We had external people come and review us a couple of years ago when I was the director of the creative writing program, and they asked what our courses capped at, and I said 20, and both of their jaws dropped. And they said, and this was when I was teaching three classes, and they said, "Do your colleagues know how much work you're doing?" And then they gave me two more classes. The other classes I teach are writing intensive lit courses and 4-credit American Lit surveys. I'm also supposed to be a writer, because who's a creative writing teacher who's not a writer? Well, we've raised that question: how are we supposed to write? When would we be doing any writing? And I can tell you, this semester I'm contracted to write a book. I couldn't get it done last year, so I started in the summer, and I'm writing it right now. So my schedule, daily schedule, is I come in every day, all day here, and teach my classes and grade as much as I can between classes. I go home at night because I arrive earlier than my wife. I clean the house. I cook dinner. And after we eat, I go in the basement, and I've been writing 1,000 words a night. And then I get up in the morning and do it again. I've also published 3 collections of novels. And after 3 collections of novels and 26 years of teaching, I'm led to feel that I don't have credentials, which is why I'm in the position I'm in. My response is, what the hell? What would you possibly want? What more is there to give? That's about all I have to say.
Thank you, Dennis. Are there any questions for Dennis?
Yeah, Dennis, you're a lecturer now. Just, if you're comfortable sharing, what kind of appointments are they giving you? 1, 2, or 3 years?
3-year terms, and I just now went through the hell of reappointment. And the other thing about reappointments is it's humiliating.
Yeah.
I don't feel at this point in my career, with 26 years of really fantastic student evaluation, that I have to justify what I've done lately. It's torturous, and then there's that long, long wait. And this year, they've never done this before, this year, on a Saturday, I received a certified letter from the college. And my wife and I both assumed that's it. It was on the weekend, so we had to wait out the whole weekend to actually pick up the letter. And I didn't know this, but my wife was in tears. She'd been hiding it from me.
She thought it was a notice of non-renewal.
Yeah, absolutely, because I'd never gotten it in certified mail.
Oh.
So I have to say I really resent that whole process.
And that's the thing, it could be. It always could be.
Yeah.
Letter of non-renewal.
And if you're comfortable sharing, what was it? Was it a reappointment?
It was a reappointment.
But normally they've only sent the reappointment
in
the first class.
This was the first time that I've seen it.
Interesting.
So we're living on the edge. We're just always living on the edge. Who doesn't like me? I've managed to piss off both the last provosts. I saw Don Christian. We'd met once ever when he was provost at a department meeting, and I was outside evilly smoking a cigarette. And the president walked by and he looked at me and he said, "Good afternoon, Dennis."
How do you know my name?
It's scary.
You're probably on a dartboard somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Dennis. My next person on the list is Victor DeMonk, but I don't see him, and Mona Zier Khan from Binghamton I don't see, so we'll go straight to Steve Pampanella, who is a lecturer in the sociology department, and he comes to us, I think, from the campus at Albany, where he was before he became a lecturer here. Okay, Steve.
Thanks, Peter. Hello, everyone. Sorry I wasn't here earlier. I was teaching a course, but I'm glad to be here and very happy that this event is happening. I think we need more events like this just to raise awareness amongst ourselves about the issues that we all face. I think as academics, Peter has said this in the meetings I've had with him, we are kind of trained and expected to not question the overall structure of the work environment that we're in, and the university as a whole. But I think it is very important to question that, and so events like this are essential. So I guess I just wanted to talk about my own personal experience and how I feel about adjuncting now, and where I feel the academic field is in general, and you know where is our place here. So I've been adjuncting for about 3.5 years. I just finished my PhD, and I'm going on the job market now. I'm in the process of sending out job applications to many different employers, of course, pursuing that, you know, brass ring of a tenure-track position. You know, I was always a little nervous about going on the job market. I didn't know what it was like. But now that I'm in the midst of it, I think of the, you know, it's kind of like an exclusive club, right, where you can get in and then you have the opportunity for a tenure-track position and some sense of job security, of course. On the outside of that club is everyone else who is an adjunct or some kind of contingent labor, who's non-tenure track. And so while on the outside of that, you look at this as kind of like, you know, the tenure track positions, again, as some kind of exclusive club, and it's very puzzling to me how to get into this club. I still don't think I've figured it out. And that's a real struggle, because for myself, I look around and I think of other people in my position. And we're lucky just because I guess we're a little younger and have just begun this. It's hard to see how it works. I don't see where, in fact, all the new PhDs like myself are coming out, how we're going to get hired and how we're going to get some kind of job which will provide us with some kind of real security, which I think we're all entitled to and every human being is entitled to as well. There are simply far too many new PhDs and graduate students who are going to become adjuncts compared to the actual number of tenure track positions. It's just simply, the numbers aren't feasible where we're all going to get academic jobs. And so it's very likely that many of us will stay adjuncts forever if we want to continue working in academia. And of course that means we'll have to endure low pay, poverty wages, which we have here in SUNY, and endure a complete lack of job security as well. So, you know, that was kind of what I was thinking about. I was coming here and I was thinking, well, how can I present this in such a way and say it that won't get me fired, which is a kind of difficult line to walk. So I'm still not sure, so I'm rambling here a bit. But I've come to the realization that, in fact, there are many of us that simply aren't going to get academic jobs, right? There are many of us that are going to be on the outside forever. And for those group of people, that may mean that, you know, once you make the realization that an academic job isn't coming, what do you do? You're still going to have to survive in one way or another, but at some point, many of us will have to exit academia and do something else. I'm still trying to figure out my own place in that. I'm not sure really what I intend to do, but I've realized if that's the case, then it suggests that we really can't be quite as passive anymore, and that we really should stand up and demand what's rightfully ours, which is really a living wage, a job with dignity and respect, that the current system does not provide to any of us, especially given the vast disparity in terms of administrator salaries compared to adjuncts, especially in terms of the way that the state of New York treats adjunct faculty as well as graduate labor. I find more and more today, as someone who follows state politics, that SUNY really functions as an arm of economic development to get the governor reelected. And nothing really more, right? You may have heard of something called Startup New York or Tax Free New York. The governor is using SUNY campuses basically to bring businesses to New York State who can do economic development, create jobs without paying taxes, and ultimately that means less money that's going to go into SUNY's budget that comes out of the general fund as well for the state. So I find, in fact, that really, and this is kind of, this sounds like whining, but really no one gives a damn, and no one's really interested in actually funding our institution to ensure that we can live and survive, which I think is something we deserve. So given, again, that logic, at some point there has to be some mode of resistance, and there has to be some kind of attempt to push back against the system. Again, I'm trying to figure out how can one do that without sacrificing potentially that future job opportunity. It may mean that we should just do it because not everyone is going to have that opportunity anyway. So that's a possibility, and that's something I'm wrestling with. I don't want to commit to that yet because I do still hold out hope for possibly some kind of tenure track position. But as you engage in the job market and that becomes less and less likely, one is tempted to think about jumping ship, so to speak. And so that's where I am in all of that, and I'm interested in trying to figure out how to build awareness with other adjuncts and contingent labor, and try to build some capacity to think about what actions we can take to begin to demand what's really ours, which is simply dignity and respect. I don't think that's extravagant in any way. So, thank you.
Okay. Any questions?
Sure.
Do you want to join our contingent concerns committee?
I would love to, absolutely.
Thank you.
Certainly. I apologize for not participating earlier.
Okay, we'll get you.
That sounds good.
Okay. Moving right along here, Victor DeMonk from the Anthropology Department, who's been a professor there for a number of years, is here. He's on a tight schedule, so Victor, why don't you come up and say what you have to say. We're trying to keep everybody to a 5-minute limit with maybe a minute or so of Q&A afterwards. Victor.
Well, I came in just, I don't even know your name, but it was an eloquently stated talk.
Steve.
I have a few things to say, I hope they're somewhat useful. One of them is this, that an axiom of American culture is that with a PhD or a master's degree or even BA, you should have a middle-class income. And people who are teaching courses full-time, part-time, they're all doing exactly the same job when they're teaching. And they're all expected to be professionals and be experts in their field. And a tremendous amount of investment has gone into the individuals who teach courses. Doesn't matter who they are. And certainly the distribution of good teachers to bad teachers is probably the same whether they're full-time tenured professors as part-time. There's no distinction there because all people who are professors are people who are experts in their field and should have enough competency to teach a course well. Given those conditions and given the assumption that if you have that kind of expertise, you should be in the middle class. Reading about Mary Margaret and seeing what the salaries here are is outrageous, and it's unethical, it's immoral, it's all the things that we all think it is. It shouldn't be allowed. The idea of being fired for asking for respect, even that there's that kind of fear which is bred into full-time professors too. I wake up frequently thinking, well, if I say this at a faculty meeting, I'll get fired, which I probably won't. But still, there's that fear that seems to be like a weed spread, kind of a mental weed that all grows in our minds with some ease and sort of takes over. So I think one thing we need to do is eradicate or minimize that feeling of fear. Speaking out is one of those things. But I think the other thing that needs to be done is I was a part-timer for a long time. I didn't think I was 40. I think I was 19, born in 1948, so I got my tenure track job in 1996. Whatever age that makes me. But it was by pure chance that I managed, so I'm saying, don't give up, it can happen. And I was lucky to get the job I got here. So I have been a part-timer for a long time. But the interesting thing that happened there is that having been a part-timer and having gone through a lot of shit, to put it bluntly. For example, I was at UNH, and I was told if I don't, and the teachers were on strike, and but they were still getting their salaries. I wasn't getting my salary. Should I cross that picket line or not? Because nobody was supporting me. I wasn't part of it. I wasn't in the union. And I was told clearly by my chair, you can't go to work or you'll get fired. So that's one condition, but all adjuncts are put in some positions that are just ridiculous and that full-time professors can't see. As soon as I became a full-time professor, it became hard for me to feel those. I could relate to stories, but it was hard to, because those are experiences you want to put away, frankly. Economic insecurity and instability and the kind of psychic cost on your brain, when it's over and you get a living wage, you kind of don't want to recall that. So I think that happens. And I think this was the point I wanted to make, that the division between full-time professors and part-time, we need to act as a collectivity. We need to work together. There needs to be some kind of bond between those two. We can't say, well, full-timers are getting all these benefits, we're not, and full-timers can't just kind of say, well, forget about those part-timers. And if we stand up for them, what will the cost be? There have to be bridges built between those two groups. And that gives both groups, because we're all teachers, and we should all be getting a living wage. And there's the privileged tenure track, but certainly we have to work together. This kind of whining of, as full-timers and part-timers do by ourselves doesn't get us anywhere except kind of psychic exhaust. Somehow we have to figure out ways to connect where we're working together. That's the main point I wanted to make.
Okay, thank you very much. Do you have any questions for Professor DeMonk? Okay,
just want to make sure that we got that four-letter word on, okay? We are still recording, and let's see who we have next. Joe Diamond, are you here? No, I don't see him. Okay, Glenn Gehrer, don't see him here. Let's have Dr. Lucy Barbera. She's a teacher in the Ed Studies department, and she can tell us a little bit about herself. And then we have about three or four more speakers, and we'll wrap things up at 12 noon.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon. Good morning, everyone. My name is Lucy Barbera. I have been an adjunct in the Humanistic Multicultural Education Program. It's part of the Ed Studies program here on campus for 17 years. That shocks me and amazes me. I'm a graduate of the program. I was delighted when the director asked me to write a course for the program. And subsequently, I've written three courses for that program. And have worked as an adjunct for elementary ed, special ed, and sociology now is paying for one of my courses because of popular demand. It's expressive arts. It's a very active course. I have a very hard time finding space for that course because it doesn't fit into the traditional classroom. My program has been very supportive to me. I really, really appreciate every member of that department. I feel that my biggest shock came when I substituted for maternity leave for one of the staff. And when I got my paycheck, I booked a trip to Aruba. I mean, I was so shocked by the disparity. And maybe that was naivete on my part. Maybe it was just stupidity. I don't know. But that really hit home to me, of the the disparity. And since then, my biggest concern has been having my courses canceled on me for lack of registration. Those are summer courses. During the year, we have a maximum of 30 in the class, and I don't have that problem. I have students emailing me, calling me, making circles around the building, trying to get into the class. And so other sections were added 2 years ago when the push was to eliminate adjuncts. We had two sections of two courses in expressive arts, a level one and a level two, and they were for 3 years in a row booked, 30 capacity each, and the second section was canceled due to lack of funds for adjuncts. The logic completely defied sanity, and it was a real hardship because I love to teach. I do a great job teaching, judging from my evals, and I felt the college was losing money on the deal. It wasn't just me losing money in terms of salary. I felt the college was making a very kind of crazy decision based on business practice. I know I'm probably repeating, and I heard a lot in terms of what has been said, and I want to, I'm deliberately repeating in terms of why not have contracts for us, and in terms of the practice in the field and coming to the classroom with understanding and practice. I spent a year last year on a research grant at SUNY Upstate in Syracuse at the hospital there. I'm an art therapist, and I got to work at the hospital. I actually got to teach at the hospital. I got to teach residents and nurses, et cetera. And to be able to come to my class this semester and show on a screen that large the artwork of the patients, of the children that I worked with, and really have the students connect what is happening in this class to what happens in the real world in terms of changing people's lives and contributing to the healing of so many, I think cannot be underestimated. It's almost like hard to put a dollar figure on that kind of education, where students would, at the end of class and in subsequent journals, say it changed their lives to see something so profound as the work that these kids were doing and the work that art therapy did to help them heal. So for those kinds of moments where we're affecting so many students in terms of putting them on the path to working for change and good in the world, I feel like we need to gather together as a community and work together as a community, full-time, part-time, adjunct staff, to say, you know, we're all together on this. We really need to come together on this, and we really need to make it fair and equal. Thank you.
Yeah. Are there any questions for Lucy? Okay, going toward the bottom of the list here, Joe Diamond is still not here. Glenn Gehr has shown up. So I'd like to welcome Glenn here. He's the chair of the psychology department. We've heard one of your colleagues, Doug Maynard, who shared some of his research in the first hour. And Doug, Glenn, come up and be interested. Glenn was one of the people who spoke at our forum 8.5 years ago. So Yvonne and David Hobby, who probably, are you going to be speaking today? No? It's okay. So Glenn, you're one of just the two or three people who were at the 2005 and the 2013 forum.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Peter. I appreciate the effort that you and other folks have put into this. You have been an advocate of faculty in general, adjunct faculty in particular, for a long time. there was a conscious choice years ago for the UUP on campus to pay attention to and to care about issues of adjunct faculty. When I was here early on, I came here in 2000, this was not on the radar in particular. It didn't seem it was on the radar much for the administration's perspective. It didn't seem like it was on the radar much from the perspective of the faculty as well. And so to have faculty more broadly defined and more accurately defined, and to have union issues addressed that aren't just about full-time faculty, but that look at the larger picture, I think has been an admirable thing that's been added to what we've done. I think that the forum in 2005 was largely designed to address that. Psychology department's very big, and I believe the best I can do to add to the conversation would be to sort of speak about issues of faculty from different statuses as that is situated within the Department of Psychology. Our department has grown quite a bit. So I've been chair for 5 years now. The enrollments have increased at the undergraduate and graduate levels 30 to 35% within that particular time period. This has put an awful lot of pressure on our seats. Our undergraduate numbers have gone from 300 something to over 500 something in the major. And there's been a lot of very, I guess, idiosyncratic historical things that have happened in that same time period. So one of the things that I heard Lucy speaking about a bit that impacted our department in an adverse way was there was a, and I think I do understand the logic, even though the logic I don't think is reasonable, but there was a point at which there was, I don't know if it was a budget crisis or a budget problem or budget concerns, this might have been about 2 or 3 years ago, but the response of the administration to the budget crisis from about 3 years ago was to get rid of adjunct classes and to reduce these sections. And our department, for better or worse, will offer anywhere between maybe 10 and 20 or sometimes more than 20 sections of adjunct classes a particular semester. So it hit our department particularly hard. And it was, like Lucy was saying, it was kind of hard to understand. It's like, wait a minute, everyone knows. Anyone who has maybe eighth grade math or more can look at this and say it's cheaper to have sections taught by adjunct faculty. So it was very confusing to people. For adjunct faculty with very strong reputations to have their full sections canceled, it was just weird. So what Lucy's saying was weird in other departments on campus. It was weird in the Department of Psychology. The fiscal rationale was somewhat convoluted, and again, from an absolute eighth grade math sense, it simply didn't really make sense. It made sense in a very idiosyncratic kind of way. I do think that the situation has gotten better, at least from our department's perspective. In terms of hiring adjuncts, I mean, the word about 3 years ago, the word was we were going to get rid of adjuncts, and this made the headlines of the papers, and this was the concern. And one thing that I told people at the time, and this has remained accurate, it didn't happen, it wasn't really going to happen. In a department like ours, we always will always have a need for many sections that are taught by adjunct faculty. And it's dependent on semester to semester, and sometimes it's complicated, unfortunately unpredictable for the faculty at times, but there will always be a need, particularly for specialized courses such as crisis intervention, which is a course about psychological crisis. It's an applied kind of course. Right now we have Wendy Bauer, who's a social worker who does exactly that work in Dutchess County, teaches that for us on an adjunct basis. She teaches it in a unique way. She's uniquely situated to teach that particular course. And we have several courses that are essentially best taught by adjunct faculty. So our department, I think, is, instead of the word reliant on adjunct faculty, I think that adjunct faculty are very core to the academic mission and the goals of what our department is doing. The other thing, I guess to sort of step back, our department has seen some other historical things that I know Peter has raised and some others have raised that may be kind of concerning, I guess, to sort of put out there. If we think about faculty as fitting into the category of adjunct versus lecturer versus full-time academic faculty, we have definitely seen an increase in lecturers in about that same time period. And this is one of these things that had, it's a very mixed blessing. This particular, we went from zero, maybe since I've been here, I've seen one lecturer 1 year, maybe actually was a visiting assistant professor. Suddenly we have 3.5 lecturers this academic year. In our department, I'll tell you about the adverse outcomes associated with that. Our department has huge enrollment growths. So hiring lecturers, the immediate thing is, well, we can now better cover those classes, we can hire less adjuncts. That, I think, is the reasoning of the administration. We initially thought this was going to be some kind of stopgap measure regarding enrollment growths, and I think it still remains to be determined. But in our department, in addition to teaching the courses, and I know this is true in a lot of other departments, we have significant advising loads of people, generally advising between 40 and 50 students a semester. That has increased with loss of some full-time faculty. Lecturers don't do the advising. Our department has a very big focus on student collaborative research kinds of things. So faculty essentially are expected to work with students, and when students come, we tell them about how great the research opportunities are. You're going to work closely with faculty. This is going to be an awesome experience for you. We have faculty with research expertise in X, Y, and Z. You'll get to work with them on these projects. We go to conferences. We present articles. This is like the ethos of our department. Well, full-time faculty, that's part of their job. Full-time lecturers, that is not part of their job. So replacing a full-time faculty member with a full-time lecturer immediately reduces our capacity to provide the individualized research collaboration kind of attention, which is exactly what we're promising to the students and exactly how we advertise ourselves. We lost a full-time faculty member last year. We have a retirement forthcoming, and we have an increase in lecturers, and we've had a 40% increase in our majors. So what we're having is a lot more students who are expecting this kind of experience, and our faculty are essentially being reconfigured top down so that we are definitely not as well able to address those goals that we have for our students. So I guess from the psych department's perspective, we have adjuncts, we continue to have them, and we continue to support them as best we can, and they're integral to what we're doing. I think from our department perspective, the big concern these days seems to be the shift toward lectureships that I guess we need to think about carefully. On one hand, creating a lectureship can be a great opportunity for someone who's a great teacher who has worked in an adjunct capacity for an individual. And then from a broader perspective, it has the effect of not providing the same kind of curricular opportunities that you tend to see when we're more fully staffed with full-time faculty. So these are some of the issues from the Department of Psychology, and I'd be glad to address any questions. Yeah.
It's not so much a question as a comment, which is that the same trend is taking place in English, which is a very large department. And of course, when they purged the adjuncts in our department, they upped the course load to the lecturers, so mine went up to 5.
Right, absolutely.
And the other, in our department, the lecturers, me and Larry Carr, are publishing. We're active writers, and right. We are teaching our students about publishing and the publishing world and getting into publications. And I know the other lecturers are still going to conferences.
Yep.
And we're not supposed to do that because we're supposed to be just teachers and doing nothing else.
Right. We see the same exact thing in our department. Some of our lecturers are also some of our most active scholars by choice. Some of them are on master's thesis committees by choice. Some of them are doing, initiating brand new research projects totally by choice. As a senior faculty member, we want to cultivate that. We want to see that happen for the development of that individual, and it's better for the community in general. So I think one thing that I'm hearing you say, and I'm glad you brought it up, Dennis, because I wanted to bring this up as well, 5-5 is outlandish. It's unacceptable. 5-5 is what you have at a bad community college. 5-5 is what you have if you expect people to get little out of the teaching. Someone who's teaching 5 classes a semester can't possibly do, even if they're incredibly good, can't do as good a job they would providing the education as if they were teaching 3 or 4. And it's surprising to me that a university that places such explicit emphasis on teaching says you know, 5-5. So one thing that I hope would come out of this, and it seems like there's a lot of people pushing toward this, and O'Brien has been helpful on this, 5-5 is unacceptable. 5-4 is unacceptable, to be honest. And so I think that this is something that we together as a group ought to underscore, because we know that lecturers, the best lecturers are doing exactly what you're saying, and we need that to be supported. Yeah, Lucy.
Glenn, just out of curiosity, when the lecturers were hired, were adjuncts considered?
In the particular cases we had, I guess it was kind of like case by case. In one case, we had someone who was teaching, has a PhD, very strong research background, and had been teaching piecemeal adjunct courses that were really specialized, like the kind of thing that a local clinical psychologist couldn't teach, for instance, physiological psychology, perception psychology. This person applied for a lectureship that matched those courses and got it. And so that was like, that was a situation where I'd say that it was really good for this particular individual. So in the case of Annie Olmsted, she was teaching adjunct. She's now on a lecturer line. Seems to be very good for her. In the other case, there was this idea that we needed an additional lectureship because of just how many classes we've been adjuncting. So I think when we hired Cliff Evans, who was also hired this year, at a full-time renewable. He also has a PhD, he's got awesome publications, he's a very bright guy. His classes that he's covering are, if we didn't hire him, these are classes that we would be hiring by adjuncts.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have two more people on my list. One is Ia Khan, who's the Graduate Student Employees Union person from Binghamton, and Jim D'Arcy. Is there anybody else who would like to speak who wants to be added to the list? Or forever hold your peace? No, you can spontaneously decide you want to speak. We haven't heard from a single student. Sadie, do you want to speak at some point? No? Or any of the other students who I don't happen to know, but we've got our intern here, Dan Brenner, who may want to rise to the occasion. I would like to have at least one student voice here. So think about it. You've got another 10 minutes or so. Okay, next person is Monizia Khan, who comes to us from Binghamton. And feel free to come up and tell us about yourself, about your organization. We are limited to 5 minutes, so there's your clock.
Hello, everyone. My name is Manazir Khan, and I am business agent at large, Graduate Student Employees Union, CWA Local 1104. GSU represents close to 5,000 TAs and GAs in the SUNY system, spread over 4 university center campuses, 2 medical universities, 2 doctoral awarding institutions in Syracuse and Manhattan, and 12 comprehensive college campuses like New Paltz. I'm here today to highlight one thing, that New Paltz is a costly area to live as compared to any other comprehensive college campus. And I thank Peter that he, on his own behalf, invited me to speak, even though perhaps TAs and GAs may not be considered as part of the new faculty majority. And I was flipping through President Christian's remark here. I don't see anywhere mention of teaching assistants and graduate assistants. Maybe even doesn't consider them as employees. He considers them as students. This is their story. New Paltz is the second largest campus in terms of the GSU membership among the 12 comprehensive college campuses. The only campus that exceeds in number is SUNY Oswego. On this campus, we have 80 teaching and graduate assistants. A good many of them are in English department, which I believe is next to only 4 university center campuses English department. Or maybe another campus that may come close to in its what the English department TAs do would be SUNY Fredonia. But nowhere else TAs and GAs are paid as low as on SUNY New Paltz campus among the 12 college campuses. Even SUNY Fredonia, SUNY Brockport, SUNY Geneseo pay far higher than the salary of teaching assistants and graduate assistants on this campus. One English TA once remarked that, hey, there I can rent a palace for a few $100 in Geneseo Valley or in Brockport or even in SUNY Fredonia. We have noticed that this situation exists, not for today, but for the last 5 years. I have been business agent at large, representing this campus. And a situation is like this. When the union initially negotiated the collective bargaining agreement way back in 1992, union unfortunately urged and did not negotiate contractual minimum salary for non-university center campuses. And SUNY New Paltz or medical universities and so on and so forth, other than Albany, Binghamton, Buffalo, and Stony Brook, are considered as non-university center campuses. Therefore, there is no minimum salary written in the contract for them. It was left to the goodwill and good conscience of campus administrators, presidents, provosts, deans, and so on and so forth. And you know what? These administrators' social concerns varies. On one hand, I have, unfortunately, a paradoxical situation whereby I represent members who are paid the lowest in the entire unit, as well as I represent the members who are paid the highest in the entire unit. The two medical universities are one among the few campuses which pay highest salary among all TAs and GAs. And this situation that union could not manage to negotiate minimum salary, even though wages and hours of work are mandatory subjects of bargaining, we have tried since then, but a state has not budged, never entertains the idea. We know from UUP contract that the salary of faculty, the differential between the faculty and university center and comprehensive college campuses are in the ratio of 80 versus 100. Let us say if 60,000 is paid to an assistant professor on a university center campus, on a college campus they would be paid $45,000. That ratio doesn't exist in terms of the members of graduate student employees union. And therefore, I would like you, all of you, particularly faculty members, our members are also hired on a very transient basis on this campus. At most for 1 year, one academic year. I think English department is the only exception I find where a TA may continue for more than one academic year. So no sooner do I come to know of them and sign them as members, they are about to leave. And therefore, it's very hard to organize them, very hard to organize them. I think I'm damn good in rallying up people when they have to demand for their, you know, better compensation for their work. But it's hard to find them, bring them together, and they don't have enough time to stay here so that they can do something good about it. Contract also has something called locality pay. But Ulster County, where New Paltz is, borders on downstate location area. And therefore, whatever money we have in the contract for downstate locations, members here don't qualify for it. One last thing I will say, that our members work for 20 hours per week, 44 weeks per academic year. If SUNY New Paltz and the state of New York were not a public employer, if they were a private employer, they could have been sued for not paying the state minimum hourly wage to our members. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Monazir? Yes.
And we do, you know, again, I'm incredibly
who are some of the best instructors we have, and they have a wonderful support system in our department. All 17 of them are being paid $2,500, I believe.
$5,000 for the academic year,
yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's absolutely disgusting.
I will correct myself that perhaps Cortland is another campus where they pay $5,000 for the academic year. But Geneseo pays close to $9,000. Brockport, $7,000 plus. SUNY Fredonia, $7,000 plus. When I took this position, I spoke at that time with the vice president of human resources. She was more experienced, she retired. She told me that let us meet with the president and talk about it. In the meantime, the president left the position, somebody else came in. And the new folks in HR, they get scared the moment they hear me speak about these things. So, probably best way, I think, that if Peter and other unions on this campus help, we can find a way and we can include TAs on this campus as part of the new faculty majority.
Well, you're certainly part of the contingent faculty. Okay, thank you very much.
Let me ask again, are there any students here who would like to speak on behalf of 8,000 students? Dan? Why don't we have Jim first, since I have him on my list, and it would be good to wrap up with a student voice or more. Dan, come down. Dan is a neighbor of mine in Gardner, and I'm sorry, Jim is a neighbor of mine in Gardner. He's an adjunct in the sociology department, and he's also on the board of trustees of Coastal Community College, right? Okay. Jim.
Hello. Let's see. I started teaching here in 2000. I came when Glenn came, and I earned my master's degree here. And as soon as I was ready to graduate and, you know, take my oral exams, my professors offered me a job teaching Introduction to Sociology. They said, as soon as you pass, you can start teaching. So I did that, and I've been here pretty much ever since. I took a slight break when I was working on a PhD, but I soon realized that writing isn't really my thing, and in a published and parish environment, I wasn't going to make it. So here at New Paltz, I was able to develop my skills as a teacher, and I continue doing that. And I have had mostly very good experiences here at New Paltz. I'd say the main complaint I have as an adjunct is the pay is so ridiculously low. It's embarrassingly low. I don't have to tell you all that. But I've had some great opportunities here, and I'm so grateful for the UUP for looking out for the adjuncts and getting us that small bump in pay in 2005. You know, it was probably $1,000, which is about 50% more than I was making at the time. And I was also teaching, I have taught at SUNY Ulster, SUNY Orange, and those adjuncts are still making the same amounts pretty much that they were making 14, 15 years ago. So I'm very grateful that so many people here have been working to help us out. Let's see. In addition to, so I've had a lot of great opportunities working in the sociology department. I think it's because we have people there who really care and take care of us. I've had opportunities to develop new classes, develop online classes, and I'm really grateful for that. And I hope that other departments are giving their adjuncts the opportunity to do that. All right. Another thing about being an adjunct that is troubling is the amount of additional work that you have to do in addition to teaching classes. You can't just walk in and teach classes. That takes time and preparation. And then there's after class things. You're working with students. You want to develop them. You also, as a teacher of introductory sociology pretty often, I'm also trying to recruit students into our department. And I've had many students tell me that they're in our department because of the experiences they had with me in my classes. So I'm really grateful about that too. But then there's the extra stuff that comes along with it. You know, when you teach an introductory class, I have 35 students in each class. And then I have to do midterm evaluations, which is essentially doing all the grading that you would do at the end of the semester in the middle of the semester. So that's hours and hours of work, uncompensated. Next semester, I've been notified that there's a chance I may have to again do a GE evaluation, which is hours and hours of work, also uncompensated, but you have to do it. You know, as a teacher of sociology, one of the topics I teach about is exploitation. I teach about social change. But I really can't do that with a lot of conviction because I'm an exploited person, you know? And we have these amazing people here, and we can't get any change here in the university. We try and we try, and it's not happening. So it's very hard for me to teach these subjects with any kind of conviction, those things. As Peter was saying, I'm on the board of trustees at Ulster Community College because I'm also a student. You know, I can't live on my adjunct salary, so I'm going back to school for nursing. So I'm doing that right now. We had a conference about 2 weeks ago, which had college presidents, former college presidents there, and Jerry Benjamin was the moderator. And I stood up and I asked the question, what can we do to get the adjuncts more money? And for the first time, they were there for like 2 hours talking. For the first time, there was dead silence. Nobody had anything to say, nothing. One guy eventually said, well, smarter people than I have tried to figure this out, and no one has done anything about it. No one's been able to figure it out, how to get adjuncts more money. And that was the end of the conversation. And Jerry promptly, as a good moderator, changed the subject. Right? So we never got anywhere with that. But one of the speakers was saying that the colleges can exist the way they do because of the false economy that they have by being able to pay adjuncts very little money. And why would the administration change things? Why would they sacrifice anything when they know they have us? They got us. You know, we need to keep doing this. You know, a lot of us need this work. There's this myth that a lot of adjuncts do it for fun or because it's an extra thing to do. It's some pocket change for them. I don't know any adjuncts like that. I really don't. I haven't met any. So why should they change? Well, I think the administration should recognize the value that we bring to the college. They should have some compassion and some respect for us and give us a decent wage. There's no reason not to.
Jim, if you could wrap things up.
Yeah, okay, I'm pretty much done. That's it. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Sometimes it's good when you're pressed for time, and we are pressed for time, but we are going to hear one student voice. As you go out, would you please grab as much food as you possibly can stuff in your pockets, in your backpack, in your hands, because I'm going to Chicago tomorrow morning, and I don't want to see any of this food, and Mary Thompson can only take home so many bananas, and a starving student can only take home so many donuts. So help yourself to whatever you can. Like I say, take some for your family, for your kids, for your parents, for your pets. Okay, last speaker is a student, Dan Brenner, who has been an intern for UUP for this semester, and you possibly read some of his stories in the Bullhorn. Dan, it's all yours.
Thank you. So I just wanted to, give a student voice, which I think is important, and emphasize the point that you're probably all well aware of, which is that the issue of adjunct faculty and contingent faculty is something that affects students very strongly. So, I mean, as Professor Doherty and Professor Gehr mentioned, an adjunct that teaches five classes a semester, or a lecturer that teaches five classes, there's absolutely no way that they can provide the same amount of dedication to each one of their students on top of, meeting with students outside classes and grading all those papers and then doing their own research. I mean, it's a ridiculous amount of work. I'm in my seventh semester here at New Paltz. I'm a senior graduating in December, and I'd say about half of my professors probably have been either adjuncts or lecturers throughout my time here, and I'd say most of them are very highly qualified, just as qualified teachers as the assistant and associate professors. And, these are people who obviously are very good at their jobs and deserve far more than, the poverty wages that they're being given. So I just wanted to, emphasize the point that this is something that students are affected by, and that's why I think the internship program that Peter has set up is so good, because it's really good for students to be becoming involved with this issue and to be aware of how, you know, low pay for adjuncts and lecturers and other issues on campus affect them directly. So just wanted to say that.
Okay, are there any questions for Dan? Okay, this wraps up.
I have a quick question for Dan.
Okay.
I guess I'd be curious what the students think about the fact that with the furlough situation, you're probably aware of this, that adjunct faculty are going to not teach two classes, whereas full-time faculty are going to take the time off in a different way. I was curious if you could speak to that from a student perspective.
You mean the idea of adjuncts only teaching full-time teachers teaching two classes?
No, the way that I'm not sure if you're aware. Maybe I'd assume you were, but there's a concern that's going on right now that people are being furloughed, so we're sort of not getting paid for a certain amount, and full-time faculty are being asked to take off 2 days that are non-teaching.
Right.
Adjunct faculty are being asked to take off 2 teaching days, and that just sounds to me like that should have direct implications for students. I was just curious if you had thought about it.
I mean, I think that students, I mean, especially if we're talking about those with PLA classes that are only 1 day a week or something like that, to miss those classes, whether it be from an adjunct or a full-time professor, is gonna, when you're already possibly gonna miss classes as a student, have the teacher not be able to be there because of the furlough situation, I don't know, it's just, you're paying for the class, so I think it just goes back to the idea that it's all, very costly and it's not helpful.
Can I say something about that also?
Sure.
I was kind of surprised, like most people, I guess, about this furlough situation. I schedule out my classes before the semester. So I have students at this point doing oral presentations. So I have 2 students doing presentations each day, and then I teach the rest of the class. What a furlough means for me, having to cancel 2 classes, it means the students miss 2 classes with me. And then I have to take those students and rearrange them, and then instead of me teaching for the second half of my other classes, they have to just listen to other students do presentations. So in essence, students are missing 4 classes of me actually teaching. And I don't know what the value is to them. I'm sure they're, it's great to hear other students.
Okay, I would love to continue this conversation. However, one of my colleagues just appeared at the door and gave me the T sign, which means he has a class here. So we all have to get out of here. You know what you have to do. Grab some food and take as much as you can. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter.